sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I am your host, Sean Sears, and joining me on today's episode is my co-host, Ryan Davis, as well as Michael Ernst from Cubs Den. He's their lead writer and a prospect guru, and that's why we brought Michael on the show today, to kind of get his take on some of the prospects that could potentially help this bullpen in 2019. Is Brandon Morrow, their slated closer, is not expected to be ready for the 2019 season with another elbow scope. So we kind of get Michael's take on who he thinks could maybe step in and help supplement Brandon Morrow and just the bullpen in general for 2019. Kind of go over some prospects as a whole, touch on some starters, some hitters that could make an impact, get Michael's kind of overall feel for the 2019 farm system for the Cubs. Later in the show, we'll talk about shifting, as the MLB is proposing some new rule changes to shifting that could potentially limit or even outlaw shifting. Michael has some interesting thoughts on that and some ideas he thinks could be a little more productive than maybe outlawing shifts, as I think most people would agree that doesn't necessarily solve some of the issues that are created with that. And then in the third and final segment, we kind of just touch on some Cub news, go over Cubs' new pitching coach, as well as touch on the Luis Valbuena tragedy, as unfortunately the former Cub was in a car accident and did unfortunately pass away. So we'll touch on that in the third and final segment, but without further ado, I'm going to kick it over to the interview we did with Michael from Cubs Den. Let's jump into some of this prospect talk. Ryan and I were talking about it on the podcast recently. I know Ryan wrote an article for Forbes kind of saying if you had to pick one or the other, whether it was upgrading the bullpen or upgrading offensive players, both him and I agree that the Cubs need to improve their bullpen. But with where they're going to probably allocate money this year, if they do decide to spend, it's likely going to be on a bigger bat like a Harper, not so much on a Kimbrel. But they do have some young pieces in the Cubs system right now. Dakota Mekas is a guy I've heard a lot about. Michael, who are some guys that Cubs fans should maybe want to pay attention to for this year?
Well, you touched on the main guy that I feel is the best bet to help the Cubs in 2019. Dakota Mekas is not a guy that, if you look at scouting reports and see the grades on his individual pitches, is going to blow you away. But if you look a little closer at his game, and then if you happen to be a stat line scouter, you'll see a lot more promise with him. He's a guy who doesn't throw all that hard. He tops out generally around 94, but most of the time he actually works around 91, 92. But what allows him to succeed beyond what you would expect from a guy like that is he is 6'7", and rather than being a guy that comes over the top like you generally see with guys like that who try to get on top of the ball and drive it down into the bottom of the zone, mm-hmm. he uses that length to great effect. In he pushes off the rubber really hard and very far, and he really closes the distance to the hitter. So with that added extension, he's releasing the ball a lot closer to home plate than a typical pitcher does. So that 92 plays a lot more like 95 or probably even a little higher. So the ball gets on top of the hitters really fast, and they have a very difficult time squaring him up. And So combine that with a decent slider and a decent changeup. He's able to keep guys off balance, and there's a little bit of command issues, but he's refined that a little bit each season, and it's never been an issue just because guys don't hit him. And every year he's posting ERAs like barely above one, and he's done it at every level, including AAA last year. So he's the main guy that I really like, that I think, he's somebody that I've been higher on than probably any prospect list that I've seen. I generally have him around at the back end of the top 10 in the Cubs system. So,
question about another guy that I think could be a solid reliever in an ideal world, and that's Dwayne Underwood. Mm-hmm. He has been a starter pretty much for the most part in the minors. He came up and made a spot start against the Dodgers, and outside of a long first inning, he actually settled in and pitched pretty well. So this could be, in my opinion, the type of guy who could give you two innings out of the pen every several days. What's your take on, maybe him having some sort of role in the bullpen in Chicago this year?
Yeah, I think you nailed what his ultimate role can be as a major league pitcher. He is a guy that started throughout his career, always had a little bit of injury issues. He's a guy who on occasion the Cubs were not pleased with his work ethic. But over the last couple of years, he came in improved shape, and he has really put himself back on the map as a prospect after kind of a bit of a fall in a lot of rankings. But yeah, at this point, he doesn't really have that one go-to pitch that would allow him great success multiple times through a batting order. And his command, while he has improved it, is still not pinpoint. So as a starter, you start getting through the second or the third time in the batting order, and guys start squaring him up a little bit more. So by moving him to the bullpen, not only do you, gain the benefit of him not having to face guys multiple times, but he also gets a little bit of a bump in velocity on his fastball. And that can make a big difference with him. He as a starter, he worked more about 93, 94-ish. But as a reliever, you're hoping to get, kind of in that 95 to 97 range. And that can give him a little bump as far as making him more difficult to square up, because his fastball doesn't move a ton. It's a pretty true pitch, but he does have a pretty decent curveball and a pretty decent changeup as well. So he's a guy that he could give you an inning or two out of the bullpen and not really have an issue facing left-handed hitters, especially as his changeup keeps developing. So yeah, I do like Underwood. I think for some fans that follow the prospects, him ending up as a reliever is probably a little bit of a disappointment. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that was kind of projected as a middle of the rotation guy for a long time. But for me, any prospect who makes the major leagues is a success. And then any prospect who goes on to provide any kind of value in the majors is, a win for your organization. So.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, I had talked to a scout who had seen him a few times in AAA this year, and he said that he thinks that if he does make the major leagues as a reliever, that the changeup could end up being his best pitch. What's your opinion on that?
I agree with that. His changeup is not the most consistent of his offerings right now, but when it's at his best, excuse me, I'm sorry, got a little caught in my throat there. When his changeup's at its best, it is his best pitch. It does have some nice fade and some drop down into the bottom of the zone and out of the zone. If he can nail in the consistency of that pitch, it's going to go a long way for his future success.
Yeah, and that's just so crazy because he was, known when they drafted him in the early years in the minors, it was the curveball.
Yep.
And everyone talked about the curveball. So that's crazy. I'll let Sean step in and I'll stop asking questions about Dwayne Underwood.
Now, I like Dwayne Underwood too. I like the idea of him as a reliever. I think that's probably his best career arc at this point. Another guy I've seen a lot about on Twitter recently, just because I think he was part of the Fall League team, is Braylon Marquez, a left-handed pitcher. I don't know much about him, but I keep seeing his name pop up, and I looked up his numbers, and they are surprisingly impressive. What is this guy, and what is the ceiling for a guy like Marquez?
Justin Steele is the left-hander that was in the Fall League.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay.
And I should know that.
They're both good left-handers that I have rated in the top probably half dozen guys in their system.
Right.
Steele is more advanced. He is, I think he's 22 now. He is part of the same draft class that included Dylan Cease. There was a third high school pitcher that the Cubs took that year and signed well above slot that ended up getting hurt and is out of baseball now. But obviously Cease became a big part of the Jose Quintana trade. And then Justin Steele was the other guy that he got a $1 million bonus and got off to an inconsistent start with his career. Had some ups and downs, but really started to lock it in 2017 at the high A level and showed a nice three pitch mix with his fastball, curveball, and started to develop his changeup a little bit. But he ended up having Tommy John surgery in August of 2017. Thankfully, he had a very remarkable turnaround on the rehab for that. And less than a year later, he was back on the mound. And I think it ended up only being about 9 months between when he had his surgery and when he started pitching rehab outings in Arizona. And, really blew away the rookie league competition down there, made it back up to Myrtle Beach and showed, basically hadn't missed a beat. His velocity was actually a little bit up from when it was pre-surgery. And then he did get a late season promotion to Double A. Didn't have a lot of success in his handful of starts there, but the Cubs used the Fall League as an opportunity to get him a little extra work. And he's an interesting guy. As a starter, more low 90s. His best pitch is his curveball. His changeup's just kind of average. He'll generate both ground balls and he can miss some bats. I'm still questioning his ultimate upside. I still kind of view him as a back of the rotation starter, although I've seen some people rate him in as a potential middle guy. But a lot's going to depend on whether he can hold his velocity deep into games. Otherwise, I think he might end up kind of being in more like a Mike Montgomery type, where, you can get starts out of him, but he can also be a valuable reliever. The one difference that the one upside to Steele that I might put him above Montgomery as a major leaguer is as a reliever, he could potentially work in the 95 to 97 range. And so that'll give him, a little bit more ability to miss bats than we see with Montgomery. So Steele has a little bit more of a late inning reliever fallback if he doesn't make it as a starter. So
another guy I'm intrigued by is Aramis Adaman. I always say his last name wrong. He's an interesting guy. He had a lot of talks around him towards the end of 2017. I feel like he was seen as he's definitely a top prospect for the Cubs. He took somewhat of a step back a little bit this season to an extent.
Yeah,
but he's still got a lot of potential. Where do you see Adaman fitting in this Cubs roster for these next couple of years?
He's a very slick fielder at shortstop. He's only nine. He was only 19 last year, and the Cubs were very aggressive with his placement in Myrtle Beach, which is their high A affiliate. So he didn't actually, every single at bat that he took last year was against a pitcher that was older than him. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. So he, at times he was a little overmatched. And the thing that concerns me with Ottman is he is just not a very big guy. He's like 5'10", 5'11", and maybe 160 pounds. So there is a little bit of pop in his bat, at least to his pull side, but just I'm a little worried about his physical projection as far as being able to hold up over 160 game season. But he can certainly field his position. He's got really quick hands, soft hands too, and he can make all the plays that you need at the position. He is a left-handed hitter, which, you know, especially if he doesn't end up as a full-time starter, at least he's the strong side of the platoon. So he can still project pretty well in that regard. If he does hit his ceiling as a hitter, you know, you're probably looking at a guy that could hit maybe 270, 280 and, you know, get on at like a 330 OBP. And maybe contribute, you know, 10, 12 home runs. So, that, you know, you're looking at probably at a ceiling, a league average or maybe a little above league average hitter. But to be able to get that out of a shortstop that can give you above average defense is, you know, still a pretty valuable commodity. It's just, you know, I think Baseball America had him as the top prospect in the system last year. I wasn't on board with that, but he's a, you know, so I think a lot of fans, when they see that, they say, oh, you know, this guy, you know, he's going to be like a Gleyber Torres or something maybe, but
right.
No, he's not a guy that's going to hit in the middle of your order. You know, maybe at best he might become a leadoff guy, even though he doesn't have great speed. But you're more looking at, you know, a guy that would be like a 7 or 8 hitter, but, you know, being able to, you know, actually contribute out of the 7 or 8 hole while giving you good defense at shortstop.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. Like, I was surprised to see his name show up so high, so early on the listing. I don't know if that was more of not as many known bats, or, you know, maybe they thought, well, at 19, I mean, this guy doing this well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the system is down and was even further down last year, at, you know, last offseason. I do like a lot of the talent that the Cubs added in the draft last year, so I think that did improve the system. And we did have a few guys that, at least on the pitching side, stepped up and became more solid as far as their prospect status in my eye. But it is tough to grade Ottman just because he was facing guys that in a lot of instances were 3, 4, 5 years older than him. And I mean, the numbers weren't great. At best, you could say he held his own, but there were a lot of stretches through the season where, you know, he was just hitting pop-ups and weak ground balls to second base. So, you know, there's still a lot of projection. I expect he will actually return to Myrtle Beach next year and try to maybe build on, you know, get some success there before they consider bumping him up to Tennessee.
Right. Because obviously the Cubs don't need any more ground balls. They're really good at that already. let's move on to the second segment. I want to talk a little bit more about the shifting talk from baseball and how they're considering maybe trying to limit that or change that for this upcoming season or in the future. So we'll roll into the second segment on Locked On Cubs. So as I was teasing here before, there has been a lot of talk, particularly on Twitter, but just recently, the MLB is considering trying to adopt somehow limiting rule to the shift. I know a lot of batters in general would probably be very excited. I can imagine Anthony Rizzo and Kyle Schwarber would love to see guys on the left side of the infield as opposed to the right side. Michael, what's kind of your thoughts on a shift? I know I saw you tweeting a little bit about it earlier this week. I guess how does this work and who benefits from this?
I'm not a fan of limiting the shift. I understand what they're going for, mm-hmm. but it really isn't going to add that many hits. And the hits that it does add are going to be singles, which at this right. point really don't move the needle all that much. So I'm not really sure that it's, you know, going to be the type of solution that they're going after. It doesn't increase the number of balls in play, which it seems to be what they want. They want more action. To me, it's not a solution to the problem they're trying to solve. And I think it's just going to lead to some unintended consequences. I think teams are going to be able to find ways around it too. I mean, one of the things that I tweeted out at one point was, if you can't place your third baseman over on the right side of second base, what's going to stop you from having him start out standing next to the center fielder and having him sprint in towards the pitcher as he's going into his windup? And then as soon as as soon as he releases the ball or as soon as he goes into his windup, have him sprint over and he's in short right field by the time the ball gets to the hitter. It's the same thing, mm-hmm. only now you've added a bunch of movement, in the hitter's line of sight, which, could even be distracting and be a benefit for teams mm-hmm. on defense. So I don't know. I just think baseball, front offices are too smart. They're going to figure out ways to combat anything you do as far as those type of rules. So
I looked at it and my opinion on the whole thing is I don't like it, but it doesn't bother me enough that, I would really care that much if they did it. It would just kind of be like, well, this kind of sucks. I don't like this. And then that would be it for me. Like,
I'm kind of the same way with it. It's like I said, it's mostly just, it's not a solution to the problem. And so, you change it and,
There was some research, and I can't remember. I think it might have been Russell Carlton at Baseball Prospectus who wrote maybe a year or two ago that the shift wasn't working the way people thought it was because pitchers were whether actually trying or subconsciously trying to pitch to the shift, and it was resulting in those at bats, and I'm way dumbing this down, but it was resulting in those at bats with the shift on that pitchers were walking guys at a higher rate. So in that way, is it possible they could see more balls in play? And if so, is that, I'm guessing it's probably just not a measurable difference.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think what you're going to end up with is a bunch of unintended consequences of this, which it may end up being beneficial for baseball. Maybe it will result in fewer walks and more balls in play. Yeah. Okay, great. But it's not going to be because that's the way they thought it was going to play out. So, I mean, it could still work out for them, but yeah.
Yeah. I saw somebody comment on Twitter that, they couldn't wait for the first time a manager challenged a shift.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other thing. You're just going to add more stuff like that. Is the guy's foot over the line or not?
Right.
Yeah. It's 100% going to be Joe Maddon.
Right.
Yes, it will be. A manager does not like the shift as much. I thought it was funny. Of course, like MLB's like Instagram page was putting all sorts of screenshots of people's tweets. Like Joey Galloway tweeted, like, "All I want for Christmas is this." And on that comment, Javier Baez commented saying "Por favor" with like the prayer hands and the magician hat. So take with that as you will. But I can see why players would be at least somewhat maybe interested in this because it is hard to hit against the shift. But there's also guys like Kyle Schwarber was hitting incredibly against the shift in his rookie year. Like it's more just averages than anything. I mean, just because a team has three infielders on one side doesn't mean or four infielders on one side doesn't mean, a hit can't slip through. And like you were saying, it's probably a sink ground ball. It's nothing like these scorchers are still going to fly through guys like that'll still happen. So if you're looking for more interesting hits, taking away the shift doesn't do that. It probably just adds more parity at the very best.
Yeah. I mean, the lack of action in baseball is because everybody's trying to hit home runs and getting rid of the shift isn't going to change a hitter's approach. in that regard. They're still going to try and hit home runs. And the other reason why there's no action in baseball is pitchers are ridiculously good. Everybody throws 3 or 4 miles an hour harder than they did 10 years ago. I mean, the average fastball velocity continues to increase every year, and hitters just, they don't have as much time to react in a sport where you had almost no time to react to begin with. And it leads to a lot of strikeouts. And to me, the only way you're going to increase getting balls in play is to move the mound back. That's the only solution that there is. And until they do that, they're going to, it's, you know, the putting the lipstick on a pig or whatever the, whatever that saying is.
Yeah, and I didn't even think about it from this point of view, but when you mentioned Baez, I thought about it. I would imagine that a lot of the players who are asked to shift on defense probably aren't all that comfortable with what they're doing. You know, like a third baseman who has to go to right field and make essentially a second baseman's, a longer second baseman's throw to first base. That's probably not something everyone likes to do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for a guy like Javi, it's probably not as big of a deal because he's a guy that bounces around the infield anyway, but. Yeah, I mean, you know, a straight third baseman that's never played anything else, you know, putting them out in short right field, you know, I mean, you might get a slightly higher rate of errors out of them in that regard. But is that offset by the fact that they might steal just as many hits as they give up?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you can make an argument that a guy like Josh Donaldson might not be super comfortable sitting in deep right field, but, you know, what are you gaining from that? Probably nothing. I know, Ryan, we were kind of talking about, we're interested in maybe some under the radar starters that you might have, Michael, like some guys, whether they're in the minor league system or maybe some guys that you've seen free agency wise that you might be interested in maybe contributing to the Cubs this year.
And beyond that, I think, give the fans something. I know, in my opinion, everyone thinks about the Cubs minor league system as developing hitters, but not pitchers. And really that's because we've seen it that way. But 2018 really kind of flipped the coin. In my opinion, I think a lot of people feel that way too. Pitching is now very much their strength. Who are some starters that maybe you think, not necessarily aces, but like mid, you know, like a number two or number three or number four?
Sure. Well, the first guy is someone that some Cubs fans will be familiar with just because the front office has brought him up beginning last year was Adbert Alzolay. He missed most of last year. He got hurt in spring training. He tweaked his ankle. So he started the year a little late. And then he only made about, I was like 8 starts or something like that in AAA before he went down with a lat injury that cost him the rest of the year. But in those handful of starts, he took a no-hitter into the 4th or 5th inning, I think in like 3 or 4 times. And he's somebody that Theo talked up last offseason as a guy that they view as a middle-of-the-rotation guy, but somebody that they think might be, you know, at the top half of the middle of the rotation as opposed to the bottom. They saw, at least in their view, they see him as a potential number two or number three rather than a 3 or a 4. And I do like Alzolay. I do think number two, number three is maybe a stretch. I think three is probably, you know, kind of the top for him. But he's a guy that I think is a no doubt major league contributor, assuming he stays healthy. So yeah, he's a guy that you could look out for maybe as soon as the back half of next year. And then a little further down the system, one guy that I like that doesn't get a lot of pub is Corey Abbott. He may start next season in Double A. He kind of split his 2018 between Low A and High A. So he might go back to High A for a little bit, but I would expect he could even finish next year in Triple A. He's a guy that, again, his stuff doesn't blow you away. His fastball is kind of 92, 94. He's got a decent curveball, decent slider. His slider is probably his best pitch. It's a plus. It's kind of a hard slider, almost a cutter. And then he throws a decent changeup. So he's got a nice four pitch mix, and he really keeps hitters off balance, and they never seem to square him up. And he's a guy that I like. He's got a classic starter's build too. I mean, he's not the big tall guy, but he's just kind of a nice powerful build that you don't see it being an issue of him being able to hold up durability wise. A little further down, you mentioned Braylon Marquez earlier, getting him confused with Steele. But he's kind of the best hope right now for, you know, an impact guy. Now, he's only 19 last year, mm-hmm. But he did make it to A-ball. He's in 2017, he was kind of, you know, he was 18 and he was in rookie ball and he was topping out 92-ish, 93 on occasion. Last year, though, he started throwing 94, 95 consistently and then topping out around 97. And he was doing a pretty good job of maintaining that velocity into the middle innings. He started flashing a pretty good changeup as well. And his breaking ball, it's kind of slurvy to me. I don't have a great feel for it yet, but he's gotten good scouting reports on it in the past. So he's a guy that, you know, that could end up with three average or better pitches. And he's a big left-hander. And so, you know, he's the guy that you might kind of project, into a future two or three. But, you know, he'll be 19, 20 years old next year. So, you know, he's probably still a couple of years away. And then, you know, they do have other options that I do like, but those would be the three main guys that that as a Cubs fan, I would keep an eye on is Alzolay, Abbott, and Marquez.
Last question before we let you go, because I know you need to go soon, but Duncan Robinson, that's a guy who has been kind of under the radar and made it up to AAA last year. What do you expect from him? And is that a guy that you think could be making spot starts if the Cubs need it next year?
Yeah, I think he'll be near the top of the list for the Cubs as far as, potential fill-in starts. He is a guy that has very good control, very rarely walks anyone. I think the players and the coaches in AA last year named him as the pitcher with the best control in their league, and he's a Ivy League guy like Hendricks, so he draws a lot of those comparisons as far as, you know, a cerebral pitcher with stuff that doesn't blow you away but good command. He does not have anything approaching Kyle Hendricks' changeup, though. So, you know, fans should not expect that type of impact from Robinson that they get with Hendricks. But he is a guy that he seems to overachieve everywhere he goes. So I've always kind of viewed him as a kind of a swing guy. I worry about him, you know, kind of that third time through the order. So even if he does end up as a starter, it's probably going to be as a number five and a guy that only gives you four or five innings. But, you know, I wouldn't count him out as a potential back of the rotation guy, but I think he's going to be more the, you know, a Mike Montgomery type. And they do have another control specialist that probably has a little bit better stuff in Matt Swarmer, who kind of developed as a pop-up guy last year. Previously, he'd been somebody that kind of worked at 89, 90 and would occasionally hit 91, 92-ish. But he's a really tall guy, and he added a few miles an hour on his fastball. He's now kind of 91 to 94, and he's got a nice slider. I saw some reports that he has a pretty good changeup, but I didn't really see it much in games. So I think he's a guy that might end up getting limited to the bullpen. Left-handed hitters might be able to get to him a little bit more at the major league level if he doesn't develop that changeup. But He was posting ridiculous strikeout to walk ratios, something like 9-1 last year. So, I mean, he's a guy who almost never walks anyone, and he actually does miss some bats. The one comparison I would kind of give to him, some fans might find it funny, but the good version of Luke Farrell that we saw last year, you know, there were those times where he's like, oh, you know, he got that save when he struck out a couple of guys. That's very much what Matt Swarmer can be. It's just Luke Farrell never had the consistency, especially with his command, to hit the outside corner with those pitches every time out, whereas Matt Swarmer could probably do that. So that's the type of guy that I think he could be, is that good version of Luke Farrell that we saw last year.
Okay. Well, Michael, we appreciate your time. As always, it's awesome having you on the show. We'll definitely have to bring you back on later in the season. I guess off season when we get figured out here. Of course, Michael writes, he is the lead writer for Cubs Den. He is a prospect guru. And of course, you also have a Blackhawks podcast too as well, right?
Yeah. One of my fellow Cubs Den writers approached me like a day before the NHL season and was like, hey, do you want to do a Blackhawks podcast? And I'm like, sure. Yeah. So yeah, Emergency Goalies is the name of it. It's on iTunes and that. So yeah.
Very cool.
Real quick, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you on social media?
Oh, sure. On Twitter, I am MJ_Ernst. You can also follow Cubs Den. I have control of that now, although that's not really my personal playground so much. MJ_Ernst.
So it has been somewhat of a quiet offseason for the Cubs so far. There hasn't been too much talk, but we did get a report earlier, yesterday, it looks like, from Sahadev Sharma and a bunch of other people, actually, talking about how Brandon Morrow is unlikely to be ready for opening day. He just recently got an elbow scope. Ryan, you want to show me your surprise face?
Yeah, this is my surprise face. The longtime listeners of this podcast will know that I've been harping at this issue for a while. I never understood the Morrow signing. It was 2 years, $20 million guaranteed. So it's not like you were you were saving money on not going out and signing a guy like Kenley Jansen. So I did understand it from that aspect, but I think I brought this up maybe last time, but on a recent article I wrote, he had made less than 20 appearances the five consecutive years ahead of the 2017 season where he was suddenly healthy with the Dodgers. And that was as a starter or a reliever. So less than 20 appearances in the big leagues the five consecutive years before that. This guy has always been hurt. He is hurt every single year. The fact that he got hurt and missed half the year last year should be no surprise to anyone. The fact that he is still hurt and won't be ready to start the season should be no surprise. And then if he has some sort of setback and doesn't end up pitching until June, that should be no surprise. So I never understood this. I thought they should have gone out and got somebody a little more reliable to be their closer, or if they were going to sign Brandon Morrow, maybe use him as a setup guy where you could mix him in with Carl Edwards, Steve Cishek, make Pedro Strop your closer. And then, you know, I thought it would be easier to give Morrow days off as a setup guy because you had, you know, those guys, Edwards, Cishek, Justin Wilson, you know, those guys could fill in those innings without him. And then you would still have the stability of Strope in the ninth. But so that's my rant on why I didn't like the Morrow signing. I pretty much the only thing I was a fan of the Cubs doing last offseason for the most part was Darvish. So take that for what it is.
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at too, to be honest. I mean, the Cubs need to add some reliable arms. We've talked about this to no end, but yeah, I just thought it was frustrating that once again, Brandon Morrow will likely be missing some time for the Cubs. This should have been something that was easily this spot. I feel like the Cubs took a big risk here and didn't really give themselves an insurance plan. So,
right.
Because Pedro Strop will be your closer for the moment, assuming he's healthy and ready to go. Another thing that kind of happened while we were away, Tommy, and I cannot figure out how to pronounce his last name, but it is Hotavoye.
Yeah.
Holdavoy.
Yeah. I'm not even gonna try.
Yeah, you're the smart one. he's been named the new pitching coach for the Cubs. There really isn't much information on him, to be perfectly honest. He's been a guy that's been around for a little bit. He'll be the Cubs pitching coach right now. I'm assuming the biggest thing for the Cubs is communication, as they talked about nonstop with Jim Hickey and Chili Davis. Just didn't seem like these guys meshed with who they had in the clubhouse. So the Cubs will once again go with the new hitting and pitching coach combination for this season. So that's interesting. Any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, this is something we've talked about before. I don't think we need to add too much to it.
Mm-hmm.
Continuity is important, so I think that's that's a negative in firing the pitching coach, or letting the pitching coach go, kind of a mutual thing, and then firing the hitting coach and then bringing in new ones. So it's new pitching coach, new hitting coach for the third straight year.
Mm-hmm.
Or not new to the third straight year, but a different one for the third straight year. So
right.
Yeah, that's negative, but this seems to be guys who the front office really believe in, so you know, hey, it can't be worse than Chili Davis, right?
That's kind of my thoughts here. the Twins have reportedly signed Ronald Torres to a one-year deal, which was interesting because the Cubs traded for him last week and then cut him and did, or yes, not cut him, but just non-tendered him. He became a free agent and now he is gone. So it looks like, without a doubt now, Tommy La Cella trade definitely just basically a cap-saving move at this point, right?
I guess so. And all I could think is that he was out of options and they need that roster spot. You know, La Cella, you know, everyone talks about, you know, how great he was as a pinch hitter last year, which is absolutely true for mm-hmm. the most part. But overall, this is a guy who has one skill and that's hitting. And he basically gave you zero power in 2018. So
right.
He can play second and third, not all that well. And he's a left-handed bat off the bench that has no power. So if you're going to have that roster spot, it needs to be a guy who can at least play shortstop, and he can't do that. So,
nah.
Yeah, I think that is my thought on the most likely reason why they made that move is they need somebody who has some flexibility and or could be sent down to AAA, which he cannot. And, mm-hmm. and the $1.5 million projected savings I don't think is like the biggest deal.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's more roster fit than anything. Torre has kind of made sense here, but I mean, you could probably find another piece that does that and maybe doesn't make as much. Maybe that's the Cubs thought process. Who knows?
Yeah, could be.
There have been a bunch of conflicting reports recently about how the Cubs, according to Jesse Rogers. Jeez, too many Jessies.
Yeah.
Theo says the Cubs are not on the verge of any deal. Dave Kaplan said he thinks it's too quiet and that the Cubs are in lockdown mode on the corner of Addison and Clark. Cool. I, you know, I mean, Dave knows more than anything.
But, yeah. I don't want to throw David Kaplan under the bus because he's legitimately a nice guy. But this is the guy who was first banging the drum of they're not going to go spend money. They're not going to sign anybody. And now he's saying that it's all quiet on the Western front. Theo's up to something. There's something on the horizon. Like, you know, pick a lane, dude. You know,
like, right.
Like it's one thing if you're the information you're being fed from a legitimate source changes, but you got to own up to the fact that you had previously said that you didn't agree
right.
to do anything. And that's I think what he said, like on the NBC Sports podcast was he didn't think they were going to do really anything.
Yeah, and he did say at the beginning of this tweet that he knows his narrative has been that the Cubs won't be big players, but by the way, I think I've changed my mind. So that's interesting. Kind of rolling into some rumors, there was a report that came out that the Cubs and Red Sox have ramped up their talks for Andrew Miller. I love the adjectives that are used to describe a team having an interest in a player without saying interested in. It does come from Incarcerated Bob. For people that don't know him, he's mainly a gambling Twitter handle. He has been correct on some stuff, but I'll wait for Ken Rosenthal. Speaking of Ken Rosenthal, he mentioned that he feels like the Cubs are going some move, not necessarily in response to Goldschmidt, but it definitely ups up the ante, I guess. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say that knowing the way Theo Epstein operates and you know, the way he likes to be sort of a gambler in the off season, I think that the Goldschmidt trade was the best thing for the Cubs to get Theo Epstein to go out and make a big splash of some sort, whether that be Harper, Machado, somebody else on as a free agent, or a really big surprising trade. So yeah, it in one sense, and we haven't really talked about this in detail, but in one sense it's terrible for the Cubs because Goldschmidt is probably one of the top five hitters in the game, and now the Cardinals, who, you know, they have good starting pitching, in fact, you know, they may be the deepest rotation one through five in baseball.
Sure.
The problem was they didn't have that middle of the order bat. Now they have it. So this is an 88 win team that just added a guy who, you know, really puts them over the top and makes them a more complete team. The only thing they're really missing at this point is a couple relief pitchers. If they can bring in a couple relief pitchers, that's probably a team that's looking for, you know, 93, 94, 95 wins.
Yeah, I would feel the same way. I mean, adding someone like Goldschmidt does probably light a fire underneath the front office's butts a little bit. But how does a Corey Kluber for Kyle Schwarber and probably Ian Happ sound to you?
That sounds terrible. Who was it? Was it who had that? Who said that was a rumor or thought that was a good idea?
It was ESPN. It was an article that combined Bradford Doolittle and David Sheffield. I think it was Doolittle's take on the Cubs trade for Kluber. I mean, he basically said like it would probably be Schwarber, Elmora, Happ, and then maybe even another piece for Corey Kluber. I get you're getting 3 years of control of Kluber, but three of his worst seasons in Kluber. And I mean, the article basically like puts Kluber as an ace, and he's been great, but I mean, you know, you're giving up 8 years of control of two young guys for Kluber, who is probably, you know, you're not going to see Cyan Kluber, I feel like, at this point.
No, I mean, he was really good last year, and as he has been, but he's going to be 33 in 2019. Mm-hmm. So and the other thing is the Cubs have five starters plus Mike Montgomery and the money you have committed to Tyler Chatwood. So I don't see how it fits there unless you're doing a deal where you can attach Chatwood and, you know, maybe even someone else, or like a Schwarber plus Jose Quintana for maybe like Kluber and somebody else. But I don't know who else on the roster you even want.
Yeah.
Like I all I could think was, well, the Cubs really need bullpen help, but Cody Allen, who had a down year last year, was their closer and who's been pretty good for the most part. He's a free agent. Andrew Miller is a free agent. Zach McAllister, I believe, is a free agent. He also had a down year. But if you look at it, the pitcher from their bullpen who had the third most innings pitched after Cody Allen and Dan Otero was Neil Ramirez.
Former Cub.
Yeah, like, oh my God, Neil Ramirez, I didn't even realize he was still around. He pitched 41 and two-thirds innings for them out of the bullpen, a 4.54 ERA, a 5.03 FIP. Struck out guys, but gave up a ton of home runs for the amount of innings, 9 home runs and 41 and a third. So there's no one else on that roster that you really want who's not already a free agent. Michael Brantley is a free agent. There are guys like Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor that, yeah, you absolutely want, but they're not giving those guys up. So I don't think there's any way that sort of deal makes any sense for the Cubs.
No, I would agree. And then there was some unfortunate news that came through last night. Morning, technically. There was reports that former Cub and Los Angeles Angel infielder Luis Valbuena was killed in a car accident with former Pirates second baseman Jose Castillo. So obviously disappointing. I know Valbuena's tenure with the Cubs is kind of up and down. People either love or hated his bat flips, but obviously no one wanted to see this. So sad to see their thoughts and prayers with his family.
Yeah, that's really sad. Obviously, it's sad when anybody dies, especially, you know, suddenly in a car crash. But yeah, that's just really unfortunate. I did want to mention there was I missed one player. On the Indians roster who you would want. It's Brad Hand. But I don't think that's going to happen. They're not giving him up with Kluber for a guy like Schwarber and then Jose Quintana. That's really dreaming.
Yeah, that'd be quite an arm in hand of a trade. Sorry, it's early. All right, that about does it here for Locked On Cubs before I bore anyone else with more dumb puns about body parts. I am Sean Sears. That's Ryan Davis. You can follow Ryan at Ryan Q Davis. Find all his work at Forbes, as well as
Bet Chicago.
Basically, Bet Chicago. And you do some stuff at Athletic, things like that. And then NBC Sports for me. Yeah. NBC Sports for me at Sean R. Sears. And then I'm doing a little bit of fan-sided work for the offseason right now as well. So keep an eye out for that. So, but without that, you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend. And we will be back later this week or later next week with more Cubs content for you.